listening to the Save the Marriage podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
A few years back, a friend of mine almost died. The reason he almost died is because his heart was almost completely clogged. The way they found it, it was because after he worked out, he suddenly collapsed. So the ER was his next stop. And after that, he went through emergency surgery in order to unblock the arteries in his heart. The interesting thing was he never knew there was a problem. He never knew there was an issue. But after they did the surgery, he told me how great he felt. He told me how much more energy he had, that he actually had realized how tired he had been for a while. So that raises the question of what happened. Well, over time, the arteries in his heart had become more and more clogged, and it was taking more and more effort to get the blood, the oxygen flowing through his system. It took more and more effort to make sure his body was nourished with oxygen so it could keep going. The lifeblood in his body had been clogged. Now, the reason I bring that up is not because I'm warning you about heart disease or you might need to be checked out by the doctor, as much as to recognize that our relationships have the same kind of issues, that over time, if we're not careful, the connection that is the lifeblood of a marriage slowly gets cut off, little by little, and sometimes imperceptibly to a couple until it comes to a crisis, until it comes to a heart attack of the relationship. And that's when you suddenly realize how bad it's gotten. The same is true for him, though, that if a couple can reestablish the connection, sometimes they suddenly become aware of how disconnected they've been. Maybe you can think back on a time where maybe it's not quite as bad as it is now, but that, you know, you were kind of disconnected and then suddenly something happened. Maybe you went away on a long vacation where it was just the two of you to connect, or maybe something happened that brought you together, but somewhere along the way you reconnected. And it was as if the blockage had been removed. Suddenly you were connected and realizing, wow, this is refreshing. This really feels good. This is what it means to have an alive relationship. And yet here we are looking at probably some clogged arteries in the lifeblood of your relationship, of connection. And that's where we are with this immutable law of marriage. This week, the immutable law of marriage is that connection is the lifeblood of a marriage. The connection between people is what nourishes the relationship, and lots of other things can be going on. But if the connection is still there, they can weather it. If the connection is not there, it takes almost nothing to topple the relationship. In fact, sometimes people say, you know, before we get back connected, I really need to solve this problem between us. And my response is, after you get connected, you may recognize that that problem is not so big. That sometimes what creates the feeling that the problem is huge is you're disconnected. So sometimes those arguments that seem like they just have to be solved are really one of the side effects of a lack of connection. You'll notice that a lot of times I talk about the side effects of this disconnection that come into a relationship, because really a lot of times people talk to me about all these issues of why their marriage is in trouble. And I'll name each one as a symptom of disconnection, not a problem in the marriage. Sure, it's creating problems, but it really is pointing to the problem in the marriage. And that problem is the lack of connection and the lack of an awareness of being, as we talked about in that first immutable law of marriage, in a we relationship. We relationships are about connection. We are together in this. We're connected together in this. And so connection is what pumps through that and leads us to deeper and deeper places of commitment to each other. So why is that the case? Well, we humans have an inborn need for connection. We share it with a lot of other creatures, warm-blooded creatures for the most part, but we have a different part that we can connect in ways that others can't, that other creatures can't. We can connect verbally. We can share things with each other verbally. And so it's not just proximity or a closeness to something else, somebody else, or touch that's doing it, but our capacity of talking. So we actually have more ways to connect with a spouse than, you know, is possible in any other creature pool out there. And yet we struggle with it a lot of times more because we get in our own way. there are some studies that were used years ago that you couldn't even get approved anymore at the research level with universities. But, you know, back in the day when we used to do some really weird things that were probably pretty cruel things, one of those studies, and I remember it so well in my textbook, was the monkey mama studies. You may have had the same remembrance from psychology class where you saw the picture of this wire monkey mama. It was the wired piece. And so what they would do is they would take the baby monkey away from the real mama and they would put the baby into another cage. And the baby had two options. One was to crawl into the warm terry cloth structure of a mama, a wire mama that was covered in terry cloth. So it was a fake mama, but it was covered in soft terry cloth. So it was a cuddly place to be. The other option was to go to a wired and a lot of metal mama, the construct of the mama there that had the bottle of milk. So let's go with what these two choices were. One is to climb up on the cold metal and get food, get nurturance. The other was to go to the terry cloth and to get cuddle nurturance, even if it was fake. What was interesting about this experiment is the baby would always choose the terry cloth. The baby monkey would always forgo the food to go to the terry cloth warm, cuddly place, to the point that the baby was starving itself to death in order to get some feeling of warmth and connection. That's how deep that need for connection goes with monkeys, much less with humans who need that. So we have at our very nature, a wiring for this kind of connection with other humans. And really, this connection with one other human is almost into our genetics. That's why this piece that we call marriage, this relationship we call marriage, has endured for so long, because it fits into what we need as humans as a deep connection point. In fact, when that connection falters, we watch how desperately people are to find some way of fixing that. Think about how humans struggle with doing anything other than that single connection, though. I've watched many, many relationships where they try to find a way of getting it from multiple places, and yet it seems to fail. One place that you see that very often is affairs. Affairs are often an attempt to find another point of connection. Maybe there's not enough connection in the relationship, or maybe somebody else is just looking for more connection, but for whatever reason, the connection is missing. The connection is not enough, or they want some other point of connection. They go find it with somebody else. And what generally happens is it destroys other pieces, because we can't manage multiple points of connection very well. This is also the failure of the open marriage. I have many people contact me about, you know, what about that? Maybe that would save my relationship. And what about my spouse who wants to have this open relationship? And I will tell you that there are probably exceptions somewhere out there that could prove me wrong, but I watch over and over as open marriages fail miserably because it is so hard to manage the connection in more than one relationship. It begins to be fraught with all kinds of emotional issues and all kinds of struggles. And so we see the failure of an open marriage as another indication that we humans are really designed for that one single deep relationship. Or how about the fact that you knew people in the young years of college or even just after college where they try to do the friends with benefits routine? I remember I had some friends in college that were doing that. You know, they had some friend that they would have sex with. And what would always happen is that it couldn't just be that. The connection would begin to grow because we humans are wired for that. And sex is just one of those ways that we nurture that connection. But really, it happens best within a marriage. That's why we have this institution that people struggle with so much. It's about the connection. And marriage really isn't that much of a struggle unless we don't know what we're aiming for. As I talked about in that first one, if we don't realize that we're trying to create this sense of being a we, then it does get to be a problem. But the fact is that there are these laws that if we just follow them, we get to a better place. If we violate them, we find ourselves struggling with connection and struggling with what to do about that. Marriage is about connection. That is the lifeblood. So what makes that connection? Well, I see connection happening on three different levels: physical, the emotional, and the spiritual. The physical is touch. And we share that with lots of other creatures, that proximity and touch is how they build that connection. That's how other mammals do that, just by being in the same area, by sharing resources, by being in contact with each other, they create the bonding. So physical is whenever we have physical proximity connection, sitting by somebody on the couch and holding hands, or putting your arm around them, or hugging them, or touching them on the shoulder, or stroking their hair lovingly, or touching their cheek, or having sex. All of those are physical ways of connecting. When couples are no longer touching, the physical connection has fizzled, and that's when there begins to be a level of disconnection there. The second level is emotional connection. That's when you feel like somebody is listening to you and has an empathy for you, and when somebody else is sharing their life with you. Emotional connection is the sharing of life events, of supporting each other emotionally through the struggles, and celebrating emotionally together. Both of those ends are important. So catching up with each other at the end of a day, talking about the struggles that are happening in everyday life, sharing with each other the daily tasks and how things are going are all bonding in an emotional sense. Do you feel like your spouse is there to listen to you? Do you feel like you're there to listen to your spouse? That's all that emotional piece. There are lots of couples that only find themselves able to get to those two pieces of connection, but there is a third piece, which is a deeper level of connection, and that's spiritual connection. Spiritual connection is when you share your beliefs and your thoughts and your dreams with somebody else. Those things that we don't like to share with anybody else because it's so personal and so deep within us. But when we share it, the vulnerability that's there, the capacity of bonding over those things is so great for that one reason. We have shared something that probably nobody else has knowledge of. Now, I'm not just talking here about religious beliefs. That is a part of it. But when you share what you really believe about the world and what you really believe about where you're headed and what you want in life, and when you talk about your deeper meaning and purpose in life, that's spiritual bonding. The healthiest of couples find ways of connecting on three different levels: the physical, the emotional, and the spiritual. When a relationship is in trouble, sometimes you find that those ways of connecting are cut off. Somebody might not want to be touched anymore, and somebody may not want to share their deepest held beliefs anymore. And a lot of times the place to start the connection is actually with the emotional. The reason is because that's much more neutral. Our more primitive spot of feeling threatened physically can leave us wanting to protect that area. And not being wanting to be vulnerable to our most deep self can keep us from kind of cutting off that spiritual side. So you kind of think of protecting the body and protecting the soul, the inner self. What's left there is the daily life. And so couples who are in trouble often find that it's easier to reestablish the connection by working from that emotional space. So if you're not there, what happens? If the connection is not there anymore, what happens? Well, recent research shows that our brain's physical pain area is lit up when there's disconnection. When we talk about how it hurts when somebody breaks your heart, the hurt is in the brain, a physical location of hurt. It's registering the same as if you hit something cut yourself or anything else. That level of pain shows up in the brain as physical pain. And it's also felt as emotional pain. So much so that people tell me how desperately they are to get away from the situation, to forget about how painful that is. And some people have told me that they would rather just cut the relationship off completely than to go through the pain of putting it back together. That's how desperate we are to have that connection. It's important to recognize that if you're working on a relationship, so you don't get pulled into that and say, I've got to get away from this, but to recognize that that's just a normal part of your reaction to not feeling connected. The nice thing is, when you can begin to rebuild it, it's easy to bring the relationship back. It's easier than most people think because the other person is desperate for that connection too. And so if you're both desperate for it, you're open to it, you begin to find places to connect. What is necessary is taking the risk of connecting, not waiting for somebody to reach out, but to take the risk of connecting. That's part of the whole premise behind my system, Save the Marriage. That whole system is built on the fact that you need to build that connection. So in Save the Marriage, I walk you through how to understand that connection and how to build it. Not only that, but in my three simple steps process of, for my book, How to Save Your Marriage in Three Simple Steps, the middle step, or the first step is connecting. The middle step is changing yourself so that you're more able to and willing to connect. But that first piece is how to connect. And I break it down around those three areas so that you have examples of how to do that. This is the thing. Vulnerable marriages are vulnerable because of the disconnection. Strong marriages are strong because of the connection. The immutable law of marriage that we're talking about today is that connection is the lifeblood of your relationship. If you need help with that, please check out SaveTheMarriage.com or find my book, How to Save Your Marriage in Three Simple Steps. You can find that by going to SaveTheMarriage.com/book. This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best as you work to save your marriage.
Listening to Save the Marriage podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.